You're listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show. As promised, wild week two in college football. This could be one of our biggest shows. This could be the show most filled with Schadenfreude that we have ever recorded. That is how I will say that. But we will get to that soon. First, it's going to start off with the ranked matchups from last week. There were upsets here. There were upsets across college football last week. Starting with BYU-Baylor, overtime thriller, the Cougs pulling out what will be a future Big 12 matchup, 26-20, double OT. Not a lot of points in this game, as we predicted. Baylor's defense played well, but ultimately BYU played just a little bit better here.
Yeah, if you want to, you know, take it down to singular plays in the, you know, a giant game, you know, that went two overtimes, you could say that drive before the half where BYU was able to get into the end zone changed the entire game. And it sort of did. I think we obviously saw more scoring and more action in the second half and overtimes, but that touchdown was huge because Baylor comes down the field. They finally get on the board. They finally break down the BYU defense. And then in a matter of seemingly no time, BYU is able to get down the field, score on a 20-yard pass to Chase Roberts from Jaren Hall. Really nice throw. Just a good drive overall. Baylor scores with a minute 37. BYU counters it with 2 seconds left in the half. And then all of a sudden, you know, we've got a whole new ball game compared to what was happening. But crowd was amped, as you should expect in Provo. They're always ready to rock for the Cougs, and the team did not let them down this week.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor was pretty much able to take Brooks out of the game, which is kind of a concern coming in from BYU's perspective. Hall played well enough, certainly has had better games, but considering the circumstances, was able to make some good throws and plays. But again, the defense holding Baylor under 300 yards, knew that was probably going to be asked of them, knowing how solid Dave Aranda teams usually are defensively, were able to deliver. And now I think pretty clear case for the best non-Power 5 team in America, the BYU Cougars.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And what Kalani Sitake has done at BYU in the last couple seasons is nothing short of spectacular. And I don't think it gets mentioned enough. Granted, they did have the graphic up in the first half of this game, but it was a 9:15 Central kickoff, like very much Pac-12 after dark vibes in this game of future Big 12 opponents. And that is just part of, you know, being on the West Coast in either college football or college basketball. I think not too many people really take notice of things like what BYU has done in the last two or three seasons.
Yeah, and it's been more than just we had a first-round quarterback in Zach Wilson. It's been sustained over the last several seasons, which really speaks to leadership and coaching staff being able to do that. And now we'll get to see them in the Pac or the Big 12, rather, next year. So very well-deserved victory here. They will have an opportunity to add another one to their resume next week. Fortunately, this week against Oregon will be a better time slot. I believe it's the 2:30 Central one. So a little bit easier to get some more of that national exposure that they've been missing a little bit. But huge win here, and BYU deservedly jumping up in the polls this week. We take no pleasure in saying I told you so, but Florida, woof.
Yeah.
Even when Kentucky won this game by double digits in the swamp, some numbers for you. Anthony Richardson, 14 of 35, 143 yards, 2 INTs, 6 carries for 4 yards.
Yeah.
That's Florida. And that's kind of what we said coming into the season. It's going to be boom or bust. He had some huge plays last week, was very much bottled up by a good Kentucky defense this week.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it was exactly the game plan we had mentioned. It isn't rocket science. If you make Anthony Richardson throw the ball, chances are better than not, you're going to be in good shape. One interception, really just an incredible play by the defensive lineman to hold on to the football. And then the second one was just bad all around. And this is it feels like vindication for me because I had been talking pretty negatively about Anthony Richardson, and I take no pride in doing that. I take pride in being correct. And this game just kind of proved my point in that it was there for the taking. Kentucky looked so out of sync in the first half offensively. Florida scores first. They take a lead. They get the home crowd behind them. They go up 16-7 on that botched snap over the punter's head, which credit to the Kentucky punter. That kick was spectacular. Going full speed to be able to boot it as hard as he did straight out of the back of the end zone. But that was the last points they scored with 4 minutes left in the second quarter. And it was all Kentucky in the second half. Their defense was flying. Their line was phenomenal on both sides of the ball in that second half. They absolutely dominated Florida and deserved the win on the road.
Yeah, and one of the things we were kind of concerned about coming in was Kentucky without Chris Rodriguez. Sounds like they'll be out, or they'll be without him for two more games after this. A little bit of a rough game in that department. Still, Smoke contributed 80 yards on 14 carries. The rest of the team did nothing to speak of. So they were under 100 yards on the game, which I did not think they would be able to do that and still win. So really speaks to the all-around team game that Kentucky played. Will Levis had his moments, had a nice touchdown pass, but really it's the defense locking in, keeping Florida down, and the offense did just enough to get a huge road win here. And like BYU, Kentucky vaulting up in the polls, now top 10 Cats, football school, many are saying.
Many are saying that this is something that a lot of folks have been sleeping on for quite some time at this point. But hey, shout out to Mark Stoops, now the all-time winningest coach at Kentucky, passes Bear Bryant. I think it was like 61 wins or 81 wins. I don't have the number. I'll have to get the stats department on that. Incredible. And it was the first back-to-back wins for Kentucky over Florida in multiple decades. It's 61 wins. So yeah, really, really just a big weekend all around for the Kentucky football program.
That it was. A big weekend for the Vols as well. Yeah. Hendon Hooker and company survived at Pitt. And I mean, credit to Pitt. They have been through the absolute ringer back-to-back weeks. Still very much had a chance to win this one and in overtime. But of course, Keaton Slovis goes down with an injury. Backup Nick Patty was a bit hobbled as well after a sack, really, really banged up his knee. But even so, Pitt was within striking distance. Tennessee just had a little bit too much. It's hard to find many combinations better than Hooker to Tillman. And that was certainly one of the things on full display. But if you're Tennessee, you certainly take a road win of this magnitude, however you can get it.
No doubt about it. And if nothing else, the defense learns a bunch about this or a bunch from this game, and will get better and look to improve on that. But credit does go to Pitt. They fought till the end. They really took after, you know, a team that plays like their coach, a grind it out, like we'll do whatever we can to get this win effort. Nick Patty literally on one leg playing the second half of this game and down to the wire, leading them on a touchdown drive to send it to overtime. And Abanaconda is just, he was an absolute wrecking ball out of the backfield for them. 154 yards on 25 carries, including a 76-yard run. He had a really nice game, but it's just impressive what the Vols have done so far. We've seen two sides of them, a team that blows that. And we need to like take the step back and look at the 40,000-foot view here. This team is not very far removed from losing at home to Georgia State. Like this, that was just a few seasons ago. Now they are taking care of business against Ball State, as they should, going on the road and beating a top 20 Pitt team. They've got Akron next, take care of business there. And then you've got Florida, who, as we've seen, is susceptible. They are not flawless, as maybe some had thought, or, you know, with a Heisman front-running quarterback. Hendon Hooker, you know, you give me the option between the two quarterbacks, I'm taking Hooker 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, I don't think anyone out there should disagree with you on that point. But yeah, it's Heupel has done a great job in just over a season getting Tennessee back to respectability and then some. Now this is a legitimate top 25 team. And season's young. We have not yet seen how high they can fly. Obviously, there will be significant challenges in the East, even Florida in its current state, Kentucky, obviously, Georgia yeah. is going to be the top dog, no pun intended, but Tennessee is going to be in every game. They're going to have opportunities to add to the impressive wins they have had out of the gate in this young season. So,
yeah,
definitely a team to keep an eye on and see exactly how high they can fly.
If they can beat Florida, they've got a tough stretch. It's Alabama at home, Tennessee Martin's in there as well, and then home against Kentucky, then at Georgia, but then they finish with Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. Like that, if you can somehow, some way get through that Alabama, Kentucky, Georgia stretch at 2-1, you're locked into a New Year's Six Bowl.
I would agree with that. Yeah, that's not going to be much fun at all.
No.
Yeah. Who was your big winner on Saturday?
The Fun Belt. The Fun Belt is the big winner. App State goes into Texas A&M, beats the Aggies 17-14. Really just a grinded out type game. I will ask again, what has A&M done over the last few seasons sans one win over Alabama to deserve any credit nationally?
Nothing. The thing with A&M is
they are what people think Notre Dame is.
Yes. Except they are pretty damn similar this year. Because
yes. Yes.
But under Jimbo, they just have never been able to find a quarterback who
is
worthy of kind of these lofty expectations. They are loading up the roster with talents. You know, even before this most recent recruiting class, number one in the country, they have just been, you know, top five, top 10 pretty consistently, but they just have not been able to find that guy. I mean, really since Manziel, who can kind of take you to the next level. Like everyone tried to do the mental gymnastics to convince themselves that Kellen Mond was that guy. I mean, he wasn't, as simple as that. And then, you know, you bring in Max Johnson this year, you have some young talent, and then you roll out Haynes King in this game, 13 of 20 for 97 yards, can't even get 200 yards of offense as a team. Credit to App State on that front, certainly, but also these are legitimate questions that Jimbo should be getting asked at every press conference. Like it's not quite as egregious, but it's almost to the point of like reverse Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech. It's like,
yeah,
you should be able to, and especially like the reputation Jimbo has as an offensive mind, like even, you know, even if you're not getting someone with the world's greatest arm, you should be able to at least mold them into a high level SEC quarterback and be able to deliver on these championship aspirations and expectations that keep being laid out in front of you. But
haven't been able
to figure it out again.
Yeah, I don't think he's come close to having a quarterback as good as he had even once at Florida State.
Yeah.
Like, they're in two completely different realms at this point. But, yeah, really not a good week for A&M. Notre Dame, obviously, also on the list. They lose to Marshall at home. We've talked about this many times. The mystique of Notre Dame Stadium is dead and maybe even is an advantage to some away teams, because it sounds dumb to say, because basically any top 25 team playing a group of five or lower is going to get the opponent's best shot. But like, there's something about Notre Dame Stadium that we've talked about so many times where every single time someone shows up, they're going to put on their best performance. And Marshall played a very good game. Granted, Notre Dame was horrific offensively, and there is now officially a problem. Buckner is hurt and out, and even with him in as the starter, really there was not much to write home about.
Yeah, I went to this game last year, week two against Toledo, except this time Notre Dame ran out of time, couldn't complete the comeback. Also, that late pick six was absolutely killer to make it a two-possession game. But yeah, I mean, we know what Tyler Buckner is. He's first and foremost a runner, trying to make him throw the ball 30, 35 times a game, it's just not going to be very effective. Now he's out for the year, the shoulder injury, so we'll have to see what Pine can do in a more expanded opportunity. But question coming into this week, is Notre Dame a, you know, passable offensive team? And we were just seeing more about Ohio State last week. Yep. It seems like the answer is more about Notre Dame, because as well as Marshall played, I think it's reasonable to say they're not at Ohio State's level. So the common denominator here is Notre Dame. Yeah. And again, like preseason number 5, that was nuts. And like that, yeah. The problem is, though, that that's like kind of the prevailing notion about Notre Dame every year when,
right,
you know, the last 5 years they finished higher than their preseason ranking. There is no way they will do that this year. Nope. Starting off with 2 losses, it's pretty simple, I say, knowing that it's not. It should be pretty simple offensively. Just get the ball into the hands of your best player, and they seem to struggle to get Michael Mayer the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, there are ways to, even for a tight end, there are ways to generate touches. And, yeah.
The thing is, like, their offensive sets get him in favorable matchups all the time. He just doesn't get the ball.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Which, that should be priority number one at the top of the game plan every time. It's like, look for him, please. He will be open.
You would think. But yeah, the Fun Belt is obviously the big winner of the weekend.
And then Georgia Southern too. Yeah.
Yeah, Georgia Southern.
Transition into some Scott Frost talk that we know and love so much. Yeah, only a couple weeks removed from our last Scott Frost seminar. But yeah, Clay Helton, forgot he ended up at Georgia Southern until they showed him on the sideline repeatedly. I think they rolled up something like 640 yards of offense or something just absolutely absurd. But yeah, like, this is humiliating for a number of reasons. But first of all, Scott Frost, the prodigal son, returning home. He is being paid a full $15 million buyout now because Nebraska did not want to wait 3 weeks for it to be cut in half, which that is the most insulting thing I can think of.
It is. It just continues to prove that college football or college coaching is the greatest profession on earth, because nowhere else can you be so bad at your job that they want to get you out so fast that you get paid double instead of waiting 3 weeks to get you out of that position.
And it's a little ironic almost. So October 1st, of course, Nebraska plays Indiana.
Yes.
One of his favorite opponents. But the other game before then is Nebraska-Oklahoma. And there's some great content on Reddit, but one of the things to come out of this was just someone going through and relitigating all of the just wild Frost moments, like far beyond only going 10-26 in the Big Ten, 5-22 in one possession games, which just boggles the mind more and more every time I hear just how atrocious he was in one score games. But there was, of course, 2020. He talked a massive game about playing anyone, anywhere. Yes. And then later we find out that he's been pretty aggressively trying to get out of the Oklahoma series because they just keep beating up on the Huskers so bad. And then there was the time he kept complaining about how Nebraska's crossover games were too difficult and he would like to play teams like Indiana more right before Indiana won on the road there. So he did himself no favors. And we talked about this a lot. Like, he was college football's golden boy, like the 2 year turnaround in Central Florida going undefeated. And then he comes to Nebraska and just reverts back to be just such an unlikable person. I mean, to everyone now, because even Nebraska fans won't defend him. Just such a ridiculous fall from grace. And I don't know, like whoever Nebraska hires, it's going to have to be like a big time, which I know we will struggle with because we'll want to immediately grade the hire, but it'll be a big time. Just, all right, let's wait and see, because that was the definition of universally loved home run hire.
Yeah.
No way this goes wrong. And it just wasn't even able to generate a single winning season in Lincoln, which is crazy, but that's where we are now.
Scott Frost goes on the pedestal with our favorites like Kevin Sumlin.
No.
And
Sumlin and
Stallball. But I mean, you said it perfectly earlier this season. The goalposts have moved so far already that, like, what is the breaking point? And apparently your 22nd loss in a one-score game being to Georgia Southern and Clay Helton is it. So I guess we found that line. 642 yards of offense for the Eagles on the day. They're 2-0, by the way. So head up Nebraska. That's a damn good team you lost to.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable last draw. Like the Northwestern one was pretty bad, but it's like, okay, it's the very first game of the season. We're technically not even at week one yet, so let's see how this plays out. But yeah, this was a bridge too far. But I mean, just going back really quick to the original point of this winter section, like the Sun Belt has made some very, very nice moves to get to this position. Like, obviously, Marshall is a new addition. Old Dominion is a new addition who won against Virginia Tech last week. James Madison, one of the FCS powers, getting them added to the conference. Georgia State came close to knocking off North Carolina a week after App State did. Coastal has been crushing it. Louisiana been crushing it. My boy Kane Womack at South Alabama crushing it. Like, this is a good, deep football conference, and I think you could very easily make the argument that this is, you know, football only, but might have been doing the best through this realignment era, certainly in the last couple of years. They've made some outstanding moves to make this a very, very competitive and deep, high-quality conference.
I love the addition. I mean, Texas State has been a solid addition as well. Troy is still like a good program there. And if Southern Miss can wake up, that's a good one too. I think, like in terms of the additions for these group of five programs, there's no doubt about that. I would also have to throw the MAC in there just saying, like, they somehow haven't lost anyone. Like, they have kept together so strong in the Mid-American Conference. Like, it is impressive what they've been able to do.
Yeah. The MAC needs to pick up like North Dakota State.
Yeah.
Or South Dakota State. Also powers and a number of sports. We saw what they did to Iowa. Noted good football program.
Yes.
But yeah, there's not as big a drop off as a lot of people would have you believe, I think is the best way of putting it between the Power Five and Group of Five. This was obviously a banner day for the Sun Belt, knocking off three Power Five teams on the road, two of them in the top 10, and
making a lot of money doing it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, it's just money is there regardless, adding insult to injury by winning these games. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
It's what we love.
Who is your big loser from week two in college football?
I was going to put basically these ranked teams, but I decided to change it up and go with home run hires, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Scott Frost was a home run hire, and you kind of reminded me of this. He's out of a job already. He's done. Marcus Freeman was a home run hire, and he is the first coach in Notre Dame history to lose his first three games. He is now 0-3 as the head coach at Notre Dame. Should have won the bowl game. Don't think they should have won that Ohio State game, but they absolutely should have won the Marshall game. And now they're looking at a big uphill, as we've talked about already. But yeah, I wanted to call those two out. There are obviously others out there, but those are like the two biggest by and far so far in the early portion of this college football season.
Marcus Freeman definitely could have gotten some heat off if he just simply beat Marshall as a 3-touchdown favorite at home. Losing in that fashion in the bowl game was absolutely brutal, but it's like you can understand it, especially a guy making his head coaching debut. Losing at Ohio State, you want to win every game, but wasn't the most realistic there. But yeah, this is one they had to have, and it's hard to envision very positive things this season because, you know, your offense was not good, and you've now lost your starting quarterback. That's that's tough to rebuild on the fly during the season. Maybe yeah. Pine comes in and balls out. He had a touchdown pass Saturday, but I think it is far more likely that it's just kind of more of what we've already seen this year. So it's not going to be 4-8 bad, but
yeah,
it's certainly not a New Year's Six season.
You could probably throw Jimbo in there too, just to piggyback off of what I've said before. He's really riding the coattails of an Alabama win,
which still don't really fully know how that happens, but yeah. It came at a really good time for him when the shit talk between those programs was really kicking up.
Yeah,
but yeah, like I wish just basically nothing but bad things for A&M. Just another classic week of those like midnight yell cult meetings circulating on Twitter.
Right.
Calling App State hicks and what have you. It's just lack of self-awareness. And yeah, like I just remember when he was hired and flew in on the plane, it looked like a welcoming home, you know, a president from a trip abroad.
Yeah.
Just like the fanfare there. So they're a wild bunch, but yeah, he needs to come up with some answers offensively quickly, because App State is not supposed to be the game on your schedule that gives you trouble. Like, there are going to be much harder ones coming.
Yeah, especially considering what North Carolina did the week before.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to go glass half full, which I don't think anyone in College Station does, you can salute the defense for...
Yes.
Doing much better than North Carolina was able to do. But that's the only spin zone I can really offer.
It's a damn good spin zone.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I do best. My loser is just the entire Big Ten West. Is this Minnesota's division now? Many are asking.
Very well could be.
They fought off a spirited effort from the Western Illinois Leathernecks, blew them out. Pretty much everyone else not so lucky. Talked about Nebraska, Northwestern losing to Duke. It's not great.
Mike Elko, coach of the year.
And then Wisconsin and Iowa looking absolutely anemic in home losses. So Wisconsin, Washington State, I did say it was one of the games I was looking forward to, but figured Washington State coming all the way to Camp Randall, that would be a game that Wisconsin might have their kind of typical first half struggles or slow starts, but ultimately bounce back. Not the case. Cam Ward didn't even have like a ridiculously good game or anything. Wisconsin, untimely turnovers, did not take advantage of another sterling effort from their defense. And then stop me if you've heard this one before. Iowa had a poor offensive showing against Iowa State.
They're consistent, averaging 7 points a game.
Yes, that is the progress we can offer. They scored a touchdown on offense.
Yeah, and so early.
There's that. Yeah, 2 minutes and 39 seconds into the game, Iowa scored a touchdown with their offense, did not score the rest of the game.
Tough.
Just, it's performance art at this point.
It is.
Like, Petras, 12 of 26 for 92 yards and an interception. 58 rushing yards on 25 attempts. Like, they were very close to having more rushing yards, more yards per attempt rushing than he did throwing the ball, which is ridiculous. Neither was good, as you might have guessed, in a 10-7 loss. But yeah, it's a real bummer sometimes when El Asico lives up to the name and the game is just, for most of it, unwatchable. But that is what we were treated to Saturday. But
yeah,
this is as worried as we were last week. Like, Iowa's clearly going to keep every game close, but it's just one of these weeks you would have to score in double digits, I would think.
Yeah, typically you need to do that to win. I am circling. I mean, the Nevada game this weekend is going to be very interesting, because Nevada just gave up 55 points to Incarnate Word. And then they go to Rutgers, and that has the makings of a blowout in favor of the Scarlet Knights. Like, I think Rutgers could run it up on them, to be honest with you. So there's, Yeah, there's quite a bit at stake here. Iowa needs to hit double digits, and they need to do it soon. If they can't do it against Nevada, I don't know that they'll do it at all this season. Maybe Nebraska to close the year, but it's they won't like Illinois is playing pretty well. Their defense looks good. They shut down Virginia last week, and Northwestern, for as bad as they are, they at least have shown the ability to score some points and play some defense.
Yeah. Like I would be feeling a little better about like Purdue or Illinois, but they already have conference losses, so it weighs a little heavier than losing to Georgia Southern, even though
Right.
it shouldn't. But yeah, like it Minnesota looks the cleanest so far, but it's hard to really fully trust anyone in the Big Ten West this year. So it's a normal season.
God bless.
All right, so that was week two. We wish Nebraska well in their search for a successor. But week three, we've got two ranked matchups. We've talked about a couple of these teams already, but let's dive back in. First up, BYU at Oregon. The Ducks are back into the rankings after complete and utter embarrassment week one. They got a win last week to get back to 500 and now be playing host to BYU. Still looking for that first win over an FBS opponent. Which way are you leaning here?
I'm going to take BYU. I have sworn off Bo Nix for good, and I'm going to stick to that. He played well last week. I think that's the nicest thing I can say, is that he played well. We would hope that is the case, playing an FCS opponent, but then again, you look at Iowa, and sometimes you just don't know. I just like what BYU has done defensively this season. I think they've been really consistent on that side of the ball, really controlled the clock and made teams play their style of game. I think that's going to happen again here. It is Eugene is not an easy place to play at. I give credit there and credence to that. But BYU is not Eastern Washington. BYU should come in, see what Georgia did to this Oregon team and think we've got the blueprint. We can do exactly this. And I think they win this game.
Yeah, and they can't fully replicate it, but they can do a lot of the same things that
Right.
Georgia did, even though, like you said, the environment will be a little bit different. Playing in Outson versus playing in Atlanta, I would think a priority this week is definitely going to be getting Brooks back on track after Baylor did a pretty good job of bottling up the rushing attack. You saw Georgia in that game get over 5 yards a carry, so that's somewhere that BYU should look to attack. I like the Cougs as well. I think it's going to be another similar style game that we just saw with Baylor, but Oregon is not quite as strong up front. So I think that'll be the difference. BYU will be able to win this one in regulation.
Yeah, agreed.
Miami at Texas A&M lost a bit of its luster, as you would expect, after A&M fell to App State. Can the Aggies make it two in a row here?
Miami was not impressive last week against an average at best Southern Miss team. I would like to see Tyler Van Dyke do more. I think he's been good, not great throughout this early part of the season. I'm going to take A&M. I think they bounce back here. I think they have to bounce back. I think Miami just isn't as good as the number next to the name shows, and they're going to revert back to the mean a little bit here. I think it's going to be close, and I think it's going to be low scoring. I don't think really either offense is going to find its footing just yet in the season.
Yeah, the final score definitely did not tell the full story for Miami last week. It was not as comfortable as that might suggest. It has
Yeah.
been a little bit of a rough start to the season for some of the ACC quarterbacks who are very high on coming into the season. Brennan Armstrong, you mentioned, really met a brick wall in Illinois last week. Devin Leary kind of shaky out of the gates, especially
Yeah.
against East Carolina, but I think Van Dyke will get back on track a little bit here, and I think Miami's going to lean on their defense a lot in this game. Really challenge A&M to make some plays to beat them, which I don't know if they are fully capable of that. I think this is a game where we could see Jimbo make a change of quarterback if there is another slow
Yeah.
start out of the gate. I think the crowd will really be clamoring for that. I honestly don't know if Miami wants that to happen, but I don't think there's going to be a big difference either way, whoever A&M rolls out to play quarterback this year. They are mostly known commodities, and I like Tyler Van Dyke significantly more than any of them. The rest of the roster, not equal, but I'm still going to go with the quarterback I trust here, and I'm going to take Miami for the road victory here. So put another one to the tally. We disagree on a game. So
how about that?
Big moments. Just our local A&M stan, B. Frank, is yes. always riding with the Aggies.
After I throw Jimbo into the gutter, I lift him up and dust him off.
Yeah. So you still have a soft spot in your heart for Kevin Sumlin.
Of course. My king.
Yeah. All right. So that will do it for this week's show. Reminder, we will be back again later this week for Spread Option. We are both rounding into form very nicely. We'll talk more about that on that show, and we will be back here next week. So we will see you then.